So I want to do just a really short passage. Just, you can consider this something of a follow-up to the sermon today. So I want to read from Matthew chapter 9, and I'll start in verse 9. As Jesus passed on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax office, and he said to him, "Follow me." So he arose and followed him. Now it happened, as Jesus sat at the table in the house, that behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" When Jesus heard that, he said to them, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." Then the disciples of John came to him, saying, "Why do we and the Pharisees fast often, but your disciples do not fast?" And Jesus said to them, "Can the friends of the bridegroom mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? But the days will come when the bridegroom will be taken away from them, and then they will fast. No one puts a piece of unshrunk cloth on an old garment, for the patch pulls away from the garment, and the tear is made worse. Nor do they put new wine into old wineskins, or else the wineskins break, the wine is spilled, and the wineskins are ruined. But they put new wine into new wineskins, and both are preserved." This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
So this is obviously, this story of Jesus, the reason I say it's a follow-up to the sermon is because obviously the big issue in this passage between Jesus and the Pharisees is Jesus, who Jesus eats with. It's Jesus' meals. In fact, you could say that ultimately the Pharisees want to put Jesus to death because they see him eating and drinking with all the wrong people. He's throwing these kingdom banquets, and they don't think that he's got the right guest list. That's one way of looking at what happens between Jesus and the Pharisees. But just step back from that and ask yourself this. Think about this for just a minute. How much of life and how many life events revolve around the table? How many life events revolve around eating together? Think of some examples of that. What are some things that happen at the table?
Birthday parties.
Okay, birthday parties. Yeah, that's a big one. What else?
Wedding.
Say it again.
Wedding.
Okay, wedding parties.
Meals.
Okay, like we have meals together, like family dinner. Yeah, absolutely. Say that again.
Share your day.
Okay, share your day. The conversation that takes place around a meal. So you can think of the table as a place where we form and build friendships. So families celebrate around the table. Friends get to know each other around the table. Sometimes business deals are cut at the table. So what happens at the table? Isaac, did you have
meetings?
One? Meetings, okay, yeah, that's right. Yeah, of course, we're going to do that tonight. I mean, think how many church events. I mean, it's hard to get a bunch of Christians together without eating together. It just is. And that's a good thing. That's how it should be. That's what we see in Scripture. Think about how, so we could say eating is obviously really important in daily life. There's no question. It's really important to our lives, to our culture, all of that. But it's also really important in the Bible. How did the fall happen?
Shared meal.
Okay, shared meal. Yeah, think about this. God gives to Adam and Eve everything in the garden is there for the eating. It's there for the taking. Apparently, before the fall, they could have eaten from anything. It was all there. And, of course, they also had the tree of life. There's only one tree that's off limits. And so, of course, that's the one they go to and decide to eat from. But what plunged the human race into sin? It was a meal. It was eating at the wrong table, you could say, eating at Satan's table rather than God's table. Okay, it was Satan who enticed them and led them into this meal. Okay, if the fall took place at a table, how do you think redemption is going to take place? If meals got us into this predicament, meals are going to be a big part of getting us out. And so what you see after Genesis 3, the fall happens in the context of eating, okay? But what you see in the rest of the Bible is redemption happens in the context of eating as well. Think about the Exodus. When Moses goes to Pharaoh, he says, "Let my people go." And what are they going to do if they go? What does he say to Pharaoh? I think it's in maybe Exodus chapter 9 or 10 around there. What does he say to Pharaoh? "Let my people go so that we can," what? have a meal, have a festival, a worship festival in the wilderness. And it's actually interesting to me. At first, Pharaoh says, well, you can go, but your kids have to stay. And Moses says, no, if we're going to have a big party, the kids have got to be there. We're going to have a feast. The kids have got to be part of it. Well, of course, the Exodus happens. And then after that, God actually gives to Israel a calendar with a bunch of big festivals. So there are a bunch of big feast days or feast weeks. A bunch of big festivals that are really centered around eating and drinking. And all of these events, so you've got the Feast of Passover, the Feast of Tabernacles, the Feast of Pentecost. Eventually they add some others, like the Feast of Purim, the Feast of Hanukkah. These all get added to the Jewish calendar. But they're all big feasts to either commemorate works that God has done for them or to look ahead to work God will do for them. And so the way that they commemorate and anticipate is with a meal. And then when you get into the prophets, the prophets like Isaiah, they talk about the kingdom that will come, the kingdom that the Messiah will bring in. And they have a lot of ways of describing that kingdom. Sometimes they describe it in terms of the sick being healed or the dead being made alive. But one of the most common images they use for the coming of the kingdom is that of a feast. When the Messiah comes, that will inaugurate this great feast, this great party, this great banquet. There will be eating, they'll be drinking, they'll be feasting together. And Isaiah especially, some of the other prophets do this as well, but it's one that Isaiah uses very frequently, this image of feasting together. Well, when Jesus shows up, what does he do? He comes eating and drinking. And you see this in Matthew's gospel. I especially love it in Luke's gospel. Like Luke's gospel reports more of these meals than any other gospel. You can literally eat your way through Luke's gospel because it just, you just move from one meal to another. It's kind of easy to miss, but that's really how the whole gospel of Luke is structured, is with a series of meals, basically from beginning to end. It's all about eating and who's eating with Jesus and controversies over Jesus' meals. That's really what it's all about. That is the core of Jesus' ministry, these meals that he shares with his followers. And when Jesus has these meals, what happens? This meal with Matthew is a really good example of this. Jesus calls Matthew. Of course, Matthew here, this is in Matthew's gospel, so it's really kind of autobiographical. Jesus comes and he says, follow me. And so Matthew, it says, he arose and followed him. Now it happened as Jesus sat in the table in the house that behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples. Okay, so it's Matthew has basically throws a party. Okay, so basically what happens is Jesus calls Matthew to follow him, and one of the first things Matthew does is he has a party in his house, where he invites all of his fellow tax collectors, all of these, I mean, all Matthew knows is they're sinners, because who else is going to hang out with a tax collector? They're all sinners of one sort or another, and Matthew has them into his house so that Matthew can introduce them to Jesus. Matthew says, hey, I've met this guy that I want you to meet as well. I want you to come meet Jesus. And he invites them into his house so they can have a meal with Jesus, so they can get to know Jesus. That's really what it's all about. And, of course, the Pharisees don't like this. And why don't they like it? The Pharisees saw it, and they said to his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? Now, we might be a bit sympathetic here with the Pharisees, because we know that, you know, as Paul tells us, bad company corrupts good morals. Bad company corrupts good character. So there is a sense in which you could say, well, the Pharisees, you know, there is a point to this. You have to be careful who you're around. But think about how Jesus goes on to explain it. He says, when he hears this, he says, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Okay? Do physicians hang out with sick people because they approve of sickness? You got a couple of physicians here. Do you guys hang out with sick people because you approve of sickness? Jesus is hanging out with sinners. That doesn't mean he approves of their sin. Physicians hang around sick people all day long because they want to bring healing. And that's how it is with Jesus and the sinners who come to him. It's not that he approves of their sin. It's that he's the physician. They're sick. He wants to bring healing. And in fact, then Jesus says to them, you know, the Pharisees prided themselves in knowing the Old Testament. Jesus says to them, go and learn. And he quotes from Hosea chapter 6 to them. So he's almost insulting them here. It's like, you guys think you know the Bible. Why don't you go and learn what it really teaches? And the quotation from Hosea 6 says, I desire mercy and not sacrifice. Sacrifice is a way here of summarizing the Pharisees' way of piety, what they think it means to be a pious or a godly person. But their way of being pious drives them away from sinners. They want to build barriers so that they don't have anything to do with sinners instead of going to sinners so they can show them mercy. And so Jesus says, you got it backwards. You should be in the business of showing mercy to people who need it, of helping people who are in need, of sharing the gospel with those with people who are lost. One last thing here. So the Pharisees come, they ask their question. Obviously, that's an antagonistic question. But then disciples of John come, and you can consider this a more friendly question. They are disciples of John, after all, and John has borne witness to Jesus. But the disciples of John come, and they say, hey, you know, we fast, and the Pharisees fast, but you and your disciples, you don't fast. You guys are feasting all the time, it seems like. And I talked about this in the sermon. And listen to how Jesus answers. He says, can the friends of the bridegroom mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? Okay? If you go back to the Old Testament, okay, you think about Israel and Israel's relationship with Yahweh. One of the ways that relationship is described is as a marriage, where Yahweh is the bridegroom and Israel is the bride. Okay, we would think of this in terms of Ephesians 5 as Christ and the church. Christ is the husband and the church is his bride. In the Old Covenant, it's Yahweh is the bridegroom and Israel is the bride. What is Jesus saying about himself here? Can the friends of the bridegroom mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? Well, who is he claiming to be? The bridegroom. Which means he's claiming to be God. He's claiming to be Yahweh. He's claiming to be the Lord of Israel in the flesh. He says there will be times for fasting. There will be times for fasting, but not now. He says, when I'm with you, that is the time for feasting. And I think that's really, really important. When we gather for worship, when we gather each Lord's Day, this is the bride coming to meet with the bridegroom. And that's why every Sunday we have a feast. We're with the bridegroom. It's not a time for mourning. It's not a time for fasting. It's a time for feasting. And think of the Lord's Supper this way. The Lord's Supper, you know, I mentioned this in the sermon too. The way that the kingdom is described to us, the kingdom as it will exist in the last day, in the resurrection, is depicted as a feast. In Revelation and elsewhere in the Bible, it's described as a feast, the ultimate feast. Okay? Think of it this way. The Lord's Supper is not just a pointer to that future feast, but it's the very beginning of that future feast in the present. We're already partaking of the future feast in the present when we partake of the Lord's Supper. Think about when the spies went into the land of promise, and of course they said there's giants in the land and all of that, but what did they come back with as sort of a token of what the land was like? Massive clusters of grapes. Okay, everything in the land apparently was giant. Not just the people, but the grape clusters were gigantic too. Okay, that land would be Israel's in the future. Those grapes were brought to them in the present so they could enjoy the beginnings of what would be theirs in a fuller way when they got into the land. Okay, and that's really what the Lord's Supper is. Okay, it's that feast of the future brought into the present, so we're already beginning to enjoy what is promised to us. That's the way we should look at it. Questions, thoughts, comments before we spend a few minutes in prayer? I don't think that's a super complicated Bible study, but I thought it fit well with the sermon this morning. There is so much in the Bible about eating, about feasting. All right, so let's spend a few minutes in prayer. What are some things we can pray for tonight?
Give an Abby update.